Hey there, nerds. Two nerdy dads back with another edition. We're on episode 3. We have Jason, the unapologetic fan of the Denver Broncos. Hey, Jason.
Oh, you're bringing that up, are you?
I have to. I won't even mention my team because they are so bad.
They just drafted someone by the name of Johnny Manziel, so I'm sure most people could kind of figure that out from there. So.
Well,
yeah.
I don't really know this. He was also drafted in the baseball draft by the San Diego Padres. So
I just saw that.
To Cleveland.
Explore all your options, man. Like, you get a backup plan just in case this thing doesn't. Tim Tebow, I bet, wish he was drafted by the San Diego Padres. I mean, come on.
Probably. But this is a true – this is why I'm a true child of the 80s. It was the last time the Browns were good.
That's true. That
but
is
sadly,
true.
That's why I hate the Broncos, because the John Elway team beat us twice.
Yeah. Yeah. I bet those are pretty miserable games to think about.
Yes.
So,
yes. Anywho, so on to our nerdy stuff. We're talking about our wives. And
yeah.
To what level are our wives nerds? And how much do they really know about our own nerdiness? Did you want to jump in on that?
Yeah, I mean, the last couple episodes we've kind of, you know, mentioned that a little bit. So I thought, well, let's explore that maybe a little bit further. And what got me thinking about it was, as I've talked about before, I'm looking into doing an article on She-Hulk. So I was trying to get as much She-Hulk stuff as I can get. So I'm going on Amazon and getting some of the trade paperbacks and stuff. And I just was thinking, wow, I think I've just spent like about $60 on She-Hulk stuff. I wonder if my wife's going to be upset about that. Because, you know, yeah. I mean, there's only so much. And we've talked about, I've always said, hey, there's worse things I could be into that are more expensive, you know. But I'm pretty lucky, and I think you probably are too, in that, you know, my wife is, while she's not a huge comic book nerd, she knows enough about it. I mean, she could name most of the X-Men. You know, she knows Batman. She doesn't really read comics. She enjoys going to see the movies with me. But I think mostly she enjoys it because she knows I enjoy it. So that's kind of why. But if my wife is a nerd for anything, it is certainly Lord of the Rings. She's a huge Lord of the Rings nerd. Yeah. When we were first married was around when shortly after we were first married was when the movies came out. And I remember going and seeing the movies several times. And she was just geeked up for them, if not more so than I was.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So that makes
that's
it kind of
cool.
Easier if there's something that she's nerdy about too, and we have a lot of shared experiences though, like that, you know, shared interests, I guess.
And that's what's nice. The longer you're married, and I know you've been married what, about 14 years?
Yes.
So
14 coming
years,
up, man.
We're gonna hit 11 this year, and obviously,
awesome.
The more you're married, the longer you're married, the more nerdy similarities and interests you have, which is very cool. I know when my wife and I first got together, one of our common nerd bonds was Star Wars. We both really, really love Star Wars. And but the caveat was, Allison said, but I don't like sci-fi. And I'm like, I don't understand, because Star Wars is clearly sci-fi. But I let it go because she likes Star Wars. But then I'm like, well, you know, do you know anything about Terminator? No. So we watched Terminator. Oh, my God, I love this. This is fantastic. I'm like, okay, cool.
Huh.
And then we watched the Alien franchise. Up to three, because four is sort of a waste of time. And she loved the Alien franchise. And then, you know, like, we kind of revisited when we had the kids, Back to the Future. And she loves Back to the Future. I'm like, honey, you know these are all sci-fi, right? And so, it just clicked. She's like, oh, my God, I do like sci-fi. And I'm like, yeah, you do. It's weird, right?
So what was she thinking was sci-fi that she didn't like? Was it that she just hadn't seen those things and... never gave it a chance, or what?
I think it was a little bit of both. Like, she hadn't seen those, and she didn't really like the concept of sci-fi, almost like when people say, oh, I don't like country music, sort of that general broad term, but when she actually sat down and watched some good sci-fi, I mean, and this is where it's a double-edged sword. Growing up in the 80s, and she is an 80s child, too, she saw some bad sci-fi. I mean, it was just, you could see the hand carrying the ship going across the page, and you're like,
yeah,
what? That's some awful sci-fi. So I think that, but when you know, you have Jurassic Park, that's sci-fi. And
yeah.
When you kind of realize that, you're like, oh, yeah, you know what? I do like sci-fi.
That's pretty funny. That's pretty funny. Yeah, there's some bad sci-fi for sure, but I don't know, I like bad sci-fi sometimes. I think it's kind of fun to watch. I love watching the old 50s movies with the rubber suits and things like that. That cracks me up. It's great.
Oh, it is. And I think that's probably why the 80s is remembered as some bad stuff, because you have groundbreaking special effects in, like, Star Wars, and then you just have some awful, I can't even think of one off the top of my head, but some awful where you're just like, oh, my God, really? That's horrible. What were they thinking? And it just, you know, with the popularity of Star Wars, everybody wanted to go right into sort of space travel sci-fi, and they just missed the mark. I mean, at the same time, you have, like, Clash of the Titans, which is one of the last movies that used that kind of claymation, stop motion perfection. I mean, that was brilliantly, just so well done, and you just, you didn't get that through most of the 80s. Most of it was through this quick and bad and cheap.
Yeah. Flash Gordon comes to mind. That's one of my but I love that movie. It's so bad that it's good. I mean, the whole football scene when they're throwing that egg thing around and bouncing it off the heads of the guards and goofy stuff. That's just fun.
I've seen it kind of recently, probably about a year or two ago, and I saw it I have fond memories of it. I just remember Timothy Dalton was awesome. Max von Sydow was fantastic. But when I watched it again, you see the Hawkmen flying, and you're like, oh, my God. That's awful special effects. What the heck? And it's just, you can almost see what they were, like, the strings and the behind the scenes. Like,
oh sure.
It was awful.
Yeah. But they didn't have anything else, really, then, you know? I mean, you think about what would have happened if they actually would have made a Spider-Man movie in the 80s tied up in the lawsuits, you know, before all that got settled. It would have been terrible and probably would have set back Spider-Man for another 20 years because they would have made this terrible, awful movie that everyone would have hated.
Well, look at the Fantastic Four, the Roger Corman's Fantastic Four, when you have Mr. Fantastic doing his bendy thing, and you're like, oh, they just put a lot of foam into a T-shirt or something, and oh, jeez.
Yeah, that was bad.
In fact,
the new Fantastic Four really is. Well, we are talking about Fantastic Four here, and we've already established the past two episodes that neither of us are great fans of Fantastic Four. So,
well, that's a topic. I mean, we didn't plan on talking about this, but now that you bring it up, I am floored at the extent Marvel is going to sort of sabotage 20th Century Fox, and they're going to discontinue anything to do with Fantastic Four as far as comic books and artwork. Have you heard this?
I have not. That sounds kind of dirty.
I was floored. They're ending the book, and I'm not reading it, so I don't know what's going on. I don't know if they're going to laugh, like, hey, let's kill everybody for a while. But they're basically going to do nothing with those characters as far as their own book to not promote, because they don't want to promote the family. The Richard family is, thereby promoting a movie.
So is this just sort of like they're going on strike or something? Like, it's like, okay, give us back the rights for these characters? Or
it's kind of like that. I read this article about it, and they said they did it with the X-Men. And I'm like, I didn't get that at all. Again, I'm not really collecting all the X-Men books right now, but I've seen X-Men on the rack, so I don't know what they meant by not supporting it. Then again, there's like 20 X-Men books, so.
Well, maybe that's what I was just going to say. Maybe they canceled half of them and no one noticed because there were so many anyway.
Maybe that's it. But yeah, I was like, wow, this is it's sort of playing dirty. On the one hand, I've always wanted Marvel to have their characters back because they've done a great job. But at the same time, I'm like, yikes, that's underhanded. I'm not a big fan of that.
No, and, you know, the thing that I feel they need to do with Fantastic Four that would be good, in my opinion, is one of two things. Either one, make it a Challengers of the Unknown kind of intergalactic travel Doctor Who-ish kind of a thing, you know, where you've got these characters and send them places and have the negative zone, you know, that kind of fun stuff. Because
yeah.
that's there's nothing there. I mean, we're going to see the first film go into with Guardians be, you know, in that sort of niche. And maybe if that's really successful, maybe that's something in the future they could think of with Fantastic Four. Or the other way is just go completely emphasize the family. Make it like, I mean, look how successful The Incredibles was. And that was basically the Fantastic Four. I mean, you have this family of superheroes. And you could play that aspect of it up and market it. And I think doing it as an animated Pixar type of thing would be, you know, successful. I think it would work really well, but maybe that's just not what they're into or what they're looking for.
Yeah, I'm torn on that one. That's a weird one.
Yeah.
I agree. I don't know why, and especially now that they're Marvel's with Disney, I'd like to see less of the, hey, we're going to release this not as serious, not the greatest storyline animation that people are going to buy direct to the video, and
yeah.
maybe go, hey, we're going to do a, not necessarily Pixar, but we're going to do a really serious animation with Disney and pull out all the stops, tell a great story with some of our characters. And I know they're doing that with, what is it, Superhero 6? I can't remember the name of it, but they're doing it with one of the properties, but I'd like to see them do it more.
Yeah. Yeah. Who knows?
Exactly. Who knows? But, yeah, I know you wanted to talk a little bit about Maleficent.
Yeah, well, I got to recently see that with the kids. Took them and the wife to see Maleficent. We, of course, have seen Sleeping Beauty. It was one of my son's, actually, favorite. He loved Maleficent, actually. I told you, he has this thing for the bad girls. I think I'm in trouble when he's 16.
Woo, boy.
Watch out,
man.
Exactly. between Maleficent and Ventress and Catwoman, and I think I'm in big trouble. But anyway, he loved that she could turn into this dragon, and he was this thing. And so when he was, I'm talking like 2 or 3 years old, that's who he would role play as Maleficent with the staff and everything like that. And I mean, obviously he's 10 now, so he doesn't do that anymore. But he still liked the idea, and my daughter especially, you know, liked the idea of going to see this movie. So we did. We went and saw it, and I have to say it was pretty good. It wasn't awful. I thought it would be awful. I'm not a huge Angelina Jolie fan, but I thought she did fine. I liked the story. I thought it was a pretty good story. I thought she did a nice Maleficent impersonation, you know, recreating some of the famous lines and looks of the character. And I thought I think Disney's doing a good job lately of marketing towards young women, towards girls and young women. I think they're doing a really good job. You see it with their animated features.
Mm-hmm.
Frozen, of course, being the biggest one. I mean, that thing is exploded, you know. Everybody's a fan of Frozen.
I was impressed.
Yes, it was. It was really good. And you have these strong female characters, and you really can trace those all the way back probably to Belle in Beauty and the Beast as the first sort of very independent, you know, female character who, sure, she's beautiful, but she also is intelligent. She loves books, and she turns down the handsome guy. And then you follow the rest of the Disney movies, and you have that similar trope of this girl who doesn't have to necessarily be completely rescued by the prince. And then, of course, you know, the latest couple of films, Frozen and then Brave, you have very strong female characters that
Tangled.
Utterly refuse it. Yeah, and Tangled, too, you know, where they don't need it at all. They're the protagonists, and there's no question about it. And so it was cool to see them do that also with Maleficent. I mean, first of all, it's a retelling of the story, which was clever. And it was in the motif of, I don't know if you're familiar with the musical Wicked.
I know of it. I've never seen it.
Yeah, it's good. If you get a chance to see it, it's a good a good musical, and it's got, if you liked Frozen, you might like it, because it's got some of the same, I think the actress that was on Broadway initially is the voice of, I get the characters mixed up, my daughter would be so ashamed of me right now.
Are you going to say that, is this the John Travolta version?
The John Travolta version?
I can't remember how he pronounced her name at the Oscars, but he told
me.
Oh,
my gosh. Yeah. No, not... No, I was thinking the character's name, whichever princess the kingdom into ice. It's not Elsa, it's the other one. Or maybe it is
Anna,
Elsa.
Anna. It's Elsa, because Anna's the sister.
Yeah, you're right, yes. See, you helped me out there. Elsa, and she's this strong character, right? Who?
Yeah.
And then, of course, the greatest thing is that the true love's kiss doesn't come from the prince. It comes from, or an act of true love. It comes from the sister, you know, her act of true love, sacrifice, and that breaks the spell and blah, blah, blah. So it, you know, that was cool. And I think everybody agrees that they liked that story. And Disney for a while has been going in that direction, which is nice to see. And you saw that with Maleficent. But then my only complaint is that it almost was too much Frozen. Spoiler, if you haven't seen the movie yet, you may want to skip ahead like about 30 seconds. But you have a similar thing where Maleficent, she curses the baby like she does in Sleeping Beauty because she's angry about the king who has become king because he stole her wings. And I want to talk about that because I think that's a really interesting metaphor. But and so she curses the baby, but as she's sort of keeping an eye on the baby, and the baby grows up, she sort of becomes fascinated and becomes really a mother figure to this child, to Aurora, Sleeping Beauty. And she wants to undo the curse, but she can't because she put it on. The words that she spoke, were part of it was, you know, it can't be broken. And so, and so she's the one who brings the prince to her to kiss her on, you know, as she's on the bed because she's touched the needle, and the prince is one of my favorite parts is he's like, whoa, I don't know about this, man. Like, I just met her. I don't know her that well. This is kind of weird. I was like, yeah, good. That makes sense. That's a normal reaction.
Yeah.
But then he finally does, and it doesn't work. And so then, of course, you have a very sort of Frozen type of moment where it's actually Maleficent who really loves her like her own daughter, and she kisses her on the forehead, and that's how she wakes up. And so, you know, great moment, awesome message, but I couldn't help but feeling like, that was Frozen, basically, if you know, for the most part. But, hey, I shouldn't complain, right, because this is a great message for our young girls, and I think the story of Maleficent was a great message towards these young girls, because you have this character who is a strong female character, and before she becomes sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Twisted isn't right, but bitter maybe, because of this young man who steals her wings, which I have sort of thought of as, it basically is a rape metaphor when you really look at it, because he drugs her, and when she falls asleep, he takes her wings, and she wakes up, and she's outraged, and she's in physical pain, and, you know, it's part of who she was, and her identity as a fairy, and, you know, later on, Aurora asks her, you know, I see fairies have wings, why don't you have any wings, what happened to your wings? I mean, if you think of it in that metaphorical sense, it's like, whoa, that's heavy, pretty messed up, but it's innocent enough to where, you know, my 7-year-old, she doesn't see it that way, you know, but older people can kind of see it. And with, you know, the recent events that have been happening in our culture, I thought, wow, how apropos that this would be something that you kind of see in a story. And I don't know, I liked it. I thought that was really unique, and I thought it had a great message, and of course she's going to be bitter, of course she's going to be angry, but then she sort of comes around from that, and she realizes that her life, you know, can heal, she can have a relationship with the daughter of this guy who wronged her so, you know, so much. And of course, his relationship with his own daughter isn't very good and stuff, too, because he's obsessed with Maleficent. So, I don't know. It was pretty good. I think it certainly is tolerable to go and see with the kids. I think it's a great movie for kids. It's entertaining enough. The special effects are pretty cool. The characters are pretty neat. It's a nice little twist on the story. And then it's always cool to sort of root for the bad guy and to sort of see a different take on the bad guy's story. It reminded me real briefly of Dr. Horrible in that regard, Dr. Horrible sing-along blog, which I love, with Neil Patrick Harris. And here you have someone who's a supervillain, but he's the good guy. You know, you're like, this is the guy that I can relate to, as opposed to, you know, Captain Hammer, who's the big jerk, you know? It was similar in that regard, too, where you're rooting for this person who's sort of, you know, the outcast and kind of has gotten a raw deal, which I think that a lot of people can relate to that and find it something that they find entertaining. So I think overall I liked it. I'm glad my kids saw it. I don't know if I would ever see it again. I'll probably, you know, pick it up on DVD because Sabrina would want to see it again. But yeah, it was good. It was good. Just check it out.
That's cool. That's cool. Cause there aren't tons of family fare that you can go see. So that's nice.
Yeah. And it was a pretty good quality. I mean, some of the writing and acting was okay, but I mean, I'd rather see that than say, I don't know, what was that stupid bird movie? Rio 2 or whatever, you know, when that came out, I was like, we're not going to see that one. Thankfully, my kids have pretty good taste. I think I must be doing something right, because they did not beg and plead to go see that movie. So that's good.
That's cool. That's cool. Well, that kind of takes us to our next topic, where there's, you know, a reimagining of characters that we had growing up. And we had talked about the 80s, and there's a lot of animation and comic books from the 80s that are, you know, they've been introduced to us in movies like Transformers, the first Ninja Turtles, but they're sort of, you know, making another comeback with the, you know, seeing the ramping up of the ads for the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Have you seen the ad? What do you think?
I saw one of the trailers that they released in theaters when I went to see, I think, Days of Future Past is when I saw it. And it looked amusing. I mean, I wasn't ever a huge Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles fan. I kind of was in that, I think that was about when I was in middle school. So it was sort of in that phase of like, I'm too mature now to be playing with toys, so I'm not into this as much. But still sort of like, but this is kind of cool. You've got turtles who are ninjas. It's kind of neat. And then,
now,
you know, the action.
That toy statement obviously didn't apply to your X-Men toys.
Of course not. Those were collectible. Collectible action figures. We all know that that's what those were.
You said that like I didn't know you in junior high. Like I wasn't sitting there with the same toys. I'm like, wait a minute, what?
No, I didn't play with them anymore. Didn't mean I didn't hold on to them anymore.
Yeah, Liar, you bought two. I know you bought two. One stayed in a package and one was playable.
Yeah. No, I couldn't afford to buy two. I just opened the one that I had, and I just put it on the shelf. And it was a collectible figure. And if you caught me playing with it, I was like so much Darth Helmet from the Spaceballs. And I was like, what are you talking about? I didn't see you playing with your toys, sir. Good.
Perfect.
Absolutely. A sort of revival. I mean, all this stuff from when we were kids, if you're talking Transformers, G.I. Joe, I mean, these were things that we grew up with, and obviously they're marketing it towards, you know, people our age who remember this, the nostalgia aspect of it. And it's been hit or miss, you know, and I don't know about Ninja Turtles. It's looking more miss than hit to me. I mean, I am not a fan of Fox, Megan Fox. I just don't like her.
No,
she's April, right?
I don't know how that's even possible. I remember the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie that came out, and the big thing back then was Corey Feldman was one of the turtles. It was like, whatever, cool. And it was a fun, goofy movie, but what most people don't know, maybe they still don't realize, I don't know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the comic book, was kind of dark.
It was.
It wasn't this goofy thing that has come to be. Uh-huh. So I'm curious what they're going to do with this movie. But like you,
yeah.
I don't have a lot of trust in Michael Bay, and he's producing. Yeah. And Megan Fox, man, I was watching Transformers, and the first one, pretty good. Second one, mm-hmm. Third one, awful, and she wasn't in it. But I'm just like, I don't know. I like Brian Austin Green, and he's married to her, but other than that, I don't know.
I'm not a fan of her or Bay. I mean, for me, it was like, okay, when Transformers came out, which was really the first one that was sort of our 80s, nostalgia movies. When that came out, I went into it thinking, okay, this is probably going to be awful. And it was surprisingly good. You know, it was Shia LaBeouf hadn't jumped the shark yet, and we weren't tired of the same acting he does in every movie. It actually fit and was charming.
Did you not get chills when Optimus Prime first spoke and you're like, oh my God?
Yeah, it was cool. Yeah, I was not a fan of lips moving. I would have rather just had the face plate there, but whatever. That's cool. I can work with it. Creative interpretation, it's all good. Absolutely was pleasantly surprised by the first movie. Then the second one came out, and I was like, since when do we have to go dirty with Transformers?
Yeah.
Like, why do there have to be all these innuendos and...
Yeah.
Isn't that the one where the woman, the sorority girl, changed into a Transformer, and you're just like,
yep.
Well, if they can change into people, why don't they just do that? That would be seems to be a much more successful way to, you know, eradicate the human. But, you know, that's using logic, and that doesn't apply to Michael. That's why there's so many explosions, so you don't really see the plot holes and things.
Exactly.
Shouldn't be paying attention to that. So, yeah, not a fan. And then the third one was like, whatever. But I don't know, the fourth one, maybe. Maybe it's gonna come out. I don't know.
Yeah.
I love that they have the dinosaur ones. Why am I not thinking? I should be ashamed of myself. I couldn't afford Transformers when I was a kid, so you know that's part of the excuse that I
Grimlock. I'm with you.
Grimlock.
Yeah, that's
Grimlock.
What I had, too.
Did you? You had Grimlock?
Yeah.
Oh,
I did.
I only had Optimus. That was the only one I had.
Grimlock lost an arm along the way, but other than that, I had.
They always did.
I know. It was not quality craftsmanship back then.
Well, and you couldn't make them transform very easily. It was like, okay, fold, wait, broke.
Yep,
arm gone, great.
Yep.
I can't super glue it because then he doesn't transform anymore. So
exactly.
I guess Optimus will just be missing a fender and drive him around.
Exactly.
But,
that's too funny. But that's you do bring up a good point that the first G.I. Joe movie, I thought was pretty awful, and I was not the biggest G.I. Joe fan for the cartoon. I watched it, but I was more of a Star Wars guy, so G.I. Joe was there. And then watching the movie, I'm like, oh, my God, this is bad. But to be honest, I finally just saw on Netflix, I think it's Resurrection, the second one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, oh, my God, I was impressed. It was pretty good.
Yeah. It was the pleasant surprise because, again, your expectations were lower. So I think if I go in to Ninja Turtles with low expectations, then I'll be pleasantly surprised. You know, that's just how it'll work out.
I don't know. It's like you see in the ad where I don't even remember which turtle it is, but one of them first meets April and says, whoa, it's just a mask. And he takes the mask off, and I'm like, really? That's your joke?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, you know. Well, and it's too bad they couldn't go edgy with it, but they really can't. I mean, they've marketed it to kids so much it would cut out all the toy sales and stuff like that. And we know that's a big part of the whole thing.
Well, and that's the tough part because my son is seeing Transformers, the cartoon, the old 80s cartoon. Actually, some of the newer cartoons. It's like, I'm not going to let him see the movies, though, because they're quite violent and a lot of sex. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that. So,
and that's something we want to talk about later is what you let your kids, what you let your kids see. It's tough to negotiate sometimes. I know I've made mistakes of taking the kids to see a movie. Iron Man 3 was a perfect example. Went and saw that myself. And, you know, when you're watching it yourself, you're not thinking, okay, what would this be like? And so I'm remembering back when my wife says, well, do you think it's okay for the kids to see? And I'm like, yeah. I think it's fine. I didn't remember anything that was, like, really awful. And then in the middle of the theater, I'm just like, oh, I got the glare. Yeah, it was definitely not a not a parenting win, which we'll get to the parenting whoops later. But
ironically, yeah. I had a similar Marvel incident. I got James right from school. Opening weekend, I'm like, we're going to go see Avengers, buddy. This is awesome. So excited. Went and saw Avengers. And, you know, same thing. I'm not saying it was an awful movie and you shouldn't take your kids to it. But even at the time, I was like, no, this isn't too bad. Okay, cool. We're good. And then watching it when it came out on video with Allison, she's like, you let James see this? And I'm like, I think this is the point we went to the bathroom. I don't think he saw it. No, he definitely didn't see this part. I'm like, oops. Guess I messed up.
Spider-Man 3, though, had to be the worst because you had, yes. like, severed limbs and people. And
it was worse.
It was bad. And I don't know what I was thinking when I thought that that would be okay for the kids to see. And my son was okay with it. It was my daughter that was a little more disturbed by it. You know, it's funny. It's hard to tell. And, of course, it varies from kid to kid, too. But,
yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, 80s movies, hopefully Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is a pleasant surprise. Same thing with Transformers 4.
Hope they release the old Nintendo Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle game. I don't know if you ever played that.
Yeah,
but that
the old
was
one.
Bomb. Oh, man, you just go along, you have the van, and then you get out, and you go down the sewer and you fight.
Oh, that two-dimensional layout, too, where you just kind of went down the scroll. You didn't have to worry about going in all these different corners and exploring it. Like, okay, look, I just want Batman to walk down the screen and fight people until I get to the Joker. I don't want to have to find all these secret things. This takes up too much of my time. But then, you know, again, it's not for me. It's not for us. We have jobs that we have to get up for in the morning. So
exactly. Just tell me
stay
the
up till 4 playing.
Yeah. It's a straight line between A and B. I don't need all this other stuff. Thank
right.
You.
Yes. Exactly.
That is too funny. So, yeah, here's hoping on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Obviously, check nerdlocker.com for a review at some point. But were we going to go to parent fails now?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's go to our parent whoops and our parenting wins. So as we were talking about before, sometimes we have parenting wins where we really do something that's, like, awesome and we're excited about how our kids have just jumped onto this bandwagon that we appreciate. And then sometimes we have parenting whoops where, we did something maybe we shouldn't have, exposed them to something that maybe they didn't appreciate, or more importantly, our wives didn't appreciate.
Yes.
And
it was all with good intentions. It all started with good intentions.
Absolutely. So my story of parenting whoops is, we're at the department store, big box store, whatever you want to call it. I don't even remember which one it was. But, you know, the ones that have the big bins full of movies that are like $3 to $5 or whatever. So I'm just messing around, and I dig in there, and I see it's The Last Starfighter. The Last Starfighter. It's like $5. I'm like, we don't have anything to do tonight. I was looking for a movie to watch. I'm going to buy this, and we're going to watch it tonight. Movie night, family movie night, dad and the kids. So I take it home. I remember loving The Last Starfighter.
Oh, heck yeah.
I must have seen it on television, and it must have been, like, toned down because, I'll tell you, my daughter had nightmares because of the crazy stuff that happened in it. You've got, first of all, I did not remember that the younger brother had, like, found a stash of porn or there was some sort of, like, Playboys that were in the deal of being quiet or something like that. I was like, oh my gosh, must have been such a sheltered child. I had no idea what that meant. And thankfully my son had no idea what it meant either. And so we could move on and I could just sort of like go do, do, do. But then I forgot how violent it was. You have that alien that they send to planet Earth to kill the last Starfighter character. And he's gross and scary and creepy. So that wasn't good. And then you had the weird, the guy, the chauffeur that comes and gets him, the mentor, the Obi-Wan Kenobi character, basically, that picks up the last Starfighter character, protagonist. And he, like, his face comes off on his handkerchief. And he's got a weird, gross alien face. I was like, gosh, I did not remember that either. And then you have the cyborg protagonist that they replaced the protagonist with, so nobody knows he's gone. And he was all weird and creepy and falling apart. There's one point
they go to him and he's not quite formed yet. He's like,
yes, all this stuff that I guess I must have been scarred as a child because I had repressed all of this information because I did not remember it at all. And my daughter is like hiding behind my shoulder on this, and I'm like, oh, I am in so much trouble. I am in so much trouble. So subsequently, the Last Starfighter is in our box of DVDs to be sold at the next garage sale. That was my parenting whoops.
That is too funny. I will say, I'm with your daughter. There's a scene, I can't remember if he's on top of a tractor trailer or just on a roof, but that dude that comes down to kill Lance Guest, the Last Starfighter, he drools a little bit and it lands on his shoulder. That freaked me out forever. I think I was like 9 or 10 when I first saw it. Yeah, I would have that fear that somebody was over me, like drooling on me, ready to kill me. Oh, yeah.
That's awesome. See, I needed your advice. And you even knew the character's name. You were so good at that. I'm like the worst person with names.
Well, he's been in two movies that I know, Halloween 2 and The Last Starfighter. I don't know whatever happened to that guy, but yeah.
Well, Halloween and The Last Starfighter. That's what happened to him.
I guess he can retire on that. Why not?
More than I can say. So, yeah. So how about you? What's your parenting whoops?
Well, I don't want to throw my wife under the bus, but this is too good not to mention. So it's actually, I'm going to use my wife's parenting fail on this one. We like on Facebook, there's a group page called I Effing Like Science or Love Science. And I read the word because it's family friendly and all that. But they have a lot of awesome facts that come up, and I wish it wasn't named that because there's a lot of things that are really cool that you want to share with your kids.
Yes.
I don't remember exactly what the science fact was, because that's not the important part of the story. Allison was like, hey, James, come check this out. Look at this. And he's reading it, and he goes, Mommy, what is effing blank? What does that mean? Because he's 8 and he can read, and he's used to found it out. And I'm going, what did he just say now? And I'm like, oh, my God, honey, you did what? So,
awesome.
To me, that was too good not to pass up and pass the blame that, yeah, I got to throw my wife under the bus. But, man, when my innocent 8-year-old son just looks at Allison and is like, Mommy, what does that mean? And he's like, oh, my God, that's pretty bad, honey. Glad it was you.
Right. So what did you guys say? What did you explain anything to him? Did you say that's a bad word, we don't use that word, or what did you do?
We finally said it's the best word of the English language because it can be used in every tense and every – no.
It's a sentence enhancer. Haven't you seen that SpongeBob?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, say it in school. No. It's a great adjective.
We clearly told them we didn't give them any definitions when we said, James, it's a word you do not use. It's not very nice. You don't say it in front of other people. It's a bad word. Yeah,
Samuel L. Jackson can say this word, okay? That's
So I haven't heard him say it since. So I think we're okay. He's caught on to other lesser words like crap and my father-in-law, him. But luckily he the importance of not saying that one.
Yeah, it's important lessons. Yeah, I see those all the time on Facebook. I usually love what they have to say, but I can never share them because they have those words in it.
Exactly. And it's unfortunate. I'm not saying I want them to change. It's like, you know, do what you want to do.
No, absolutely.
It's hard, especially when you
want to. It's just a bummer. Yeah. Well, and that's part of why we wanted to start this podcast was there's so many great podcasts out there about nerdy stuff, about comics or whatever, but a lot of it's explicit and, you know, and that's fine. That's great. Like those, using those words and talking about those things it can accentuate your emotion in the podcast that you want to deliver, but it for the audience like us, where we want to listen to this maybe in the car when our kids are in the back seat, you know, playing their DSs or whatever, not probably paying a whole lot of attention, but we don't want the F-bomb flying around, you know?
Exactly. And you and I have talked about this before. That's why this is a perfect platform, because even with the Nerd Locker side of things, that's sort of the younger slant on things, and those are the kids, and that's great, and it works for them, and they don't use them all the time, but that's something that they use because they don't need to censor themselves, but for what we do, yeah.
Yeah, well and that's what we want to do.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the key.
Let's redeem ourselves. What have
yeah.
you been?
Always start. So my parenting win was I finally found the comic. It's called Lumberjanes, and I had been looking forward to it, and I missed issue one, and my comic book store had sold out of it. And so when issue two came out, I snatched it up, and then I was actually able to go to a different store and find issue one. And
very cool.
I love it. It's a great comic. It's a little bit over my kids' heads, particularly my daughter, who I'm more excited about reading it. Basically, the idea of it is you have these sort of Girl Scout type of characters. They're at a camp. And in the first issue, it just starts in the middle of this. They're out in the woods when they're not supposed to be, and they're attacked by these three-eyed wolves, supernatural foxes or something. And they have to fend them off, and then they go back to try to tell their counselor what had happened, who, of course, is upset with them because they broke the rules. And so then she takes them to the camp leader, and then they talk about how they had gone out into the woods because they had seen this woman transform into a bear. And so she's like, oh, and of course you see, okay, this is the person who knows something. And so she dismisses the counselor and then, you know, teaches them what, you know, what they're going to do. And so then basically the concept is you've got this team of girls, which one, awesome. Like how many comic
yeah.
books have a team of girls, that an 8-year-old can read, you know?
Yeah.
And they're going on these adventures. And basically, there's something big, supernatural that's going to happen. That it's basically monster fighting kind of a thing. I haven't read the second issue yet with my daughter, but we read the first one. But the second one on the cover, they're in a canoe, and there's this sort of like sea monster that's around them. And I haven't read the issue to see exactly what happens. But just what a great concept. You know, I remember going camping, and it was this great adventure. Doing Boy Scouts and stuff like that. It was, you would go out in the woods and play these kinds of games. How awesome, you know, to sort of tap into that. And then these female characters just all seem pretty cool. And you're just getting to know them. So I'm looking forward to seeing how they develop the characters. But so far, they're pretty cool characters. So that was my parenting win. And I suggest that to anybody out there, if you can get your hands on a copy of it. It's called Lumberjanes. And you can
remember who puts it out?
Comic book store. I can find it while you're telling your story.
Okay.
I will find the issue and I will tell you.
Well, that's a great one, by the way. I actually got very lucky. We got a press screening for How to Train Your Dragon 2. So I kept it a secret, and I'm like, I'm not going to tell the kids. And it was for a Saturday morning. So, sort of, my wife and I, we talked about it. We snuck the kids to the theater. They got curious. We'd never been to this theater, so they didn't know what was going on. They didn't really know it was a theater because it's inside a casino. Yeah, welcome to Las Vegas. so we go to the theater, and they finally get in, and they're super excited. They got them the popcorn candy and got them their little Gatorade, and we get in the movie theater. They got their 3D glasses, and they're treated to the press area, so they get special treatment, and they get to go up the rope, and they're super excited, and they really get this VIP treatment, and the movie was really awesome. I can't talk about it too much because we're not allowed to, but look for our review this Friday. I will say it's a great tale of living, finding, embracing your destiny. Really, really enjoyed that. A great father-son tale. But it was great because me, Dad, I looked like a hero because awesome movie. They got VIP treatment.
VIP, exactly.
They got 3D glasses, so they were super excited. And look in their eyes, you're leaving, you're like, man, that's my dad. He got us in. Yeah. that's me.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I felt really,
awesome.
Really good about that one. That was cool. And I do. I highly recommend Family Movie, How to Train Your Dragon 2. I thought the first one was great. This one didn't have to be the awe and wonder from the first one because we know this world now. But, man, it was a great story. Father-son story was fantastic. I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it looks good. And like you said, the first one was really good, so it's nice when the sequel complements it well. And it looked from the trailers like it was going to do a good job of that. So
it's cool, because they're all a little older. The characters are a little older, and they really focus a lot on family, which I was surprised. I didn't know, I mean, how do you go from, all right, we train the dragon, how do you make a sequel of How Do You Train Your Dragon 2? And they did it really well. I was impressed how they took this. It was very smart. And one of my favorite characters from Game of Thrones, unfortunately I don't know his real name, but he's Jon Snow to me. He voiced one of the new characters, so that was cool.
Oh, really? That is cool. Very cool. Well, Lumberjanes, I just found it, is published by Boombox. And it is written by Noelle Stevenson and Grace Ellis, illustrated by Brooke Allen, colors by Marta, I'm going to butcher this last name, Leho, and letters by Aubrey Ice. Again, sorry if I butchered names, but it is really good, kid-friendly book. Like I said, a little bit of it is over their heads, but I think that's sort of what's appealing of it. It you know, because you're getting some of the stuff as an adult, and the kids are getting the kid stuff. And isn't that what was the best kid stuff? I mean, you think of things like Alice in Wonderland, you know, the classics like that, or more recently, Adventure Time. And the reason they're good is that they have things to offer both the adults and the kids together. So,
well, that's I feel bad for my parents, because I'm going back and revisiting some of the stuff I liked as a kid, specific Transformers movie, and you're like, oh my God, this sucks. As an adult, but as a kid, you're like, this is awesome.
Exactly.
You know, having my parents, I'm dragging them to see this movie, and I'm like, oh, I'm in the Transformers, it's cool. And they're just sitting there, I don't know, taking a nap. I don't know what they're doing, because, man, I can't imagine they enjoyed that. But you and I are pretty lucky in that we go see a movie with our kids nowadays, and 9 times out of 10, whether it's animation or just kid-friendly, you're like, this is pretty good. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's the occasional, like, squirrel movie or the Rio 2 or whatever, where you're like, but thankfully, like I said, I think there's just more choices nowadays too.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot more out there, so you can pick the good stuff and see that.
Yeah. I think that's definitely one of the benefits, like we talked about a little bit, that you have some of the 80s stuff that's being transferred to adult fare, which is not great because you can't take the family, but then you have the flip side, and that you have some of that stuff that's coming back and making a comeback, and they're telling it from the child's perspective, like Muppets. That's perfect. You can take the family.
Oh, good example.
And we can go too, and we love it because we love those characters, and the kids love it because it's new to them and it's funny and it's fresh.
Yeah. Yeah, and then you can watch the old ones, and the old ones aren't bad either. You know, they're clever. They're funny.
We watched the original Muppet movie, and I was like, oh my God, I cannot believe all the cameos in this movie.
Oh my gosh, there's thousands, yeah.
Just
famous
people, yeah. It's very cool. And then, of course, our kids are like, I don't know who that is. I'm like, don't worry about it.
Yeah, you don't need to.
You don't
exactly.
Need to.
You don't need to. I didn't know who he was when I was a kid either.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So.
Great.
Well, cool, man. I think that wrapped up episode 3. Any final comments there, sir, from Michigan? As a Denver
well,
player?
Just if you have any parenting wins or parenting fails or whoops or whatever we want to call them, feel free to send them to us. You can send them info@nerdlocker.com.
Sure can.
The email address. Or if you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow me @ApplegateJason.
And you can follow me. You can follow me @VegasJim. Or you can just follow NerdLocker in general @NerdLocker. Also, NerdLocker on Facebook, NerdLocker.com, and NerdLocker on YouTube. And look for Two Nerdy Dads coming to iTunes very soon.
Yeah, send us what you guys think of the show, any suggested topics, parenting wins, parenting fails, whatever.
Please, parenting fails. We want to feel normal.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Let us feel good about ourselves. So, very cool. Well, another great episode. Thank you very much, Jason. And we will see you guys next week, or we will talk to you guys next week on episode 4. Take care.
All right.